from the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
In life and recovery, every day is a little different. Embrace the good days, the not so good days, and the challenges, and acknowledge how you overcame them. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.
Now, it's Jeffrey Wright and Company.
Tell your story.
Live on Memphis' sports station, 92.9 FM, ESPN.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to Jeffrey Wright and Company. My name is Jeffrey Wright. You can follow me on Twitter on X at jwright929 ESPN. As always, you can listen right here on 92.9 FM ESPN. You can also listen on 680 AM. But if you're out and about, you're not really clear or close to a radio dial, you can also listen anytime, anywhere on the Odyssey app. Make sure you download the Odyssey app to stay up to date with all of the great content here on 92.9 FM ESPN. If you missed a segment, you can even rewind and get right back to what you're looking for. So go ahead, get the Odyssey app, download it now. Dennis Fuller's producer of the program for us. Glad that he is with us. My company this week, a Memphis sports legend, former Tiger football writer for the Commercial Appeal, many, many hats for the Commercial Appeal. Also, of course, was in the athletic department for the University of Memphis, CBHS alum, on Twitter, on X, at Phil_Stukenborg. Phil, good day, sir.
Good day. How are you, Jeffrey?
I am. We had a tough start in the Wright household today, so I'd mention this to Jeff. With everyone going back to school, we thought also my daughter's daycare, which largely mirrors the city schools, or whatever now, the county schools calendar. We thought we were heading back to daycare today. And so I send off my wife, because she takes her on the way to her work, because it's about halfway between our house and where she works. And then I'm hopping in the shower, getting ready to go to work, and my speaker, which is connected to my phone, says that my wife is calling me. And my wife does not really have a habit of calling me in the morning unless something is wrong. And so now I'm like in that decision mode of, all right, do I just hustle through the shower and try to call her back immediately, or do I just get out right now and answer the phone? I decided to just get out and answer the phone because I knew there would be multiple calls, and then that would just send my wife into much more of a panic. Turns out we read the schedule wrong, and by we, I mean her, which I will give her credit. Later, she plays some pretty good defense by just going completely on the offensive end. But the schedule said they would be off from July 29th through August 5th. And there was not the notation afterwards, classes or whatever, school, daycare will resume on August 6th. So she read it as, okay, everybody else is back today. We'll be back today. Gets there, it's in service. So I was like, okay, just come back to the house. I'll call my mom, and we'll see if we could just send her to my mom's house. And that's what we end up doing. But as soon as I get back, she's like, how did you read it? And then this is that moment of, I know exactly what you're doing. And what you're doing is trying to make yourself feel better, not in the sense that I read it the same way, because she knows the answer. There's no chance I read that at all. She's in charge of the schedule. I'm the one that gets told. I always just say it's like practice. Like, just tell me where to be and when. Like, I can handle that. I can execute all that. But if you're asking me to, like, go through and study the playbook, like,
The correct answer is, I read it like you read
yes.
it.
Yes. Well, I kind of did that. I went with the, you know, I didn't read it. Like, I went with that. And so everything ends up being fine. But it was just, the whole morning got started off. Let's just say this. We now are prepared for the return to daycare. We had a walkthrough today. We had like a full speed walkthrough game situation. So we had that this morning. And then I'm rushing in trying to, Jeff wanted to try and get some audio from Seth Ryder's mixed triathlon medal. The problem was like the video that NBC's really, really tight on what video goes out. But the video that went out had nothing, like it was 5 minutes, but I never saw Seth in it once. So I can't really find that. Then we figure out, well, there was some, I don't know if controversy is the right word, but there was a ruling about, originally it seemed like the Americans had gotten third, still on the medal, still getting a medal, but then they go through the tape of, basically we had another situation like the 100 yesterday where there's tape of the American runner passing the British runner, but really it is even closer than the 100 was. Like, even when you see the video where they put the line, so then apparently some British media tweeted out that, yes, the Brits were going to be the bronze medalists, but it stinks because they've already been on the podium. Well, that turned out to not be true. Everyone got their right medals, and whatnot. We were trying to sort through all that, so that became a busy morning. But we're lo and behold, we're here. It's Monday. It's Overreaction Monday. We're fired up. And I'm really glad because we get to start with one of the true historians of Tiger football. Nobody knows more about Tiger football than you, Phil. So I'm excited to kind of walk through some of today because I think we're doing this move with Tiger football where there's like some real significant program firsts. And it doesn't quite feel like that. But at the same time, I can't decide if that is the way we're feeling, if that's just college football in general, everything. And so I kind of wanted to walk through that. We'll do that to start the show. Munz will join us like he does each and every Monday on the program. We'll talk some Tiger basketball with him and more. We'll get into the list. Lots to get to from the Olympics, from the world of college football as well. The NFL Top 100 came out. We'll talk about that during hour number two. We'll tell your story, and then we will get out of here. But I think let's start first with the news. We got the USA Today. It's the U.S. LBM. When we start to get into, is that a financial institution category? Like, that's where I feel like I'm now at the point where I do not know the title sponsors, with all due respect to all our fine friends at Gannett. Mark was texting me this morning. I do not know U.S. LBM. It feels like a financial institution, but I have no clue. Like, that's just when I start seeing, it's like, am I actually mixing up, like, USBS? Like, I don't know. But we got the coaches poll. And really, I think what matters to me beyond Georgia being one, and we can go through all the SEC teams. We'll probably do that a little bit later. But Memphis comes in fifth in others receiving. And I went back and looked it up. The only other time in Tiger football history, with the coaches poll, I did not specifically go and look at the AP poll because we don't have that yet. And I honestly did not find an archive. That's the biggest reason. There has technically been one other time when this situation happened in which Memphis received this many votes or was this high in others receiving votes prior in the preseason coaches poll. But it comes with an asterisk. It was the COVID season when, at the time the preseason poll came out, everybody had not declared that they were playing.
Yeah.
And so Memphis was fifth in others receiving then. Even if you go through 2019, 2017 and 2004, which I thought those would be the three big years, because even in 2003, when the Tigers have a good team, that team was like caught people by surprise. Like, even maybe if they shouldn't have, but that's it became as the year went on, but it wasn't preseason hype. The 2004 team obviously had preseason hype. So we're at a point in which this is the first time that I could tell I was not able to find preseason Missouri Valley rankings. Oh. But I believe this is the first time ever the University of Memphis has been the preseason favorite to win the league.
That is correct.
They've had divisions, correct, but not win the league. So we're at highest preseason ranking, preseason expectations through the roof. But there's just something, I don't know, I guess my first overreaction is, as much optimism as you can have about this team, I still feel like the most preseason buzz I can ever remember is the 04 year. And it's I don't know how you feel about it.
I do, because in the 04 year you had, you know, D'Angelo back, you had Danny Wimpron back, you had Steven Gostkowski back. And so people knew that team. Those guys had kind of grown on them. They've gotten to watch them grow up too. And this one you got Seth Hennigan back, you've got Rock Taylor back. But there's again, just through the transfer portal era, you're getting a lot of new faces in. Plus you've lost, I think a lot of it has to do with the you know, the program has lost some of its rivals over the past few years. So there's some of that, and there's this, you know, there's the stadium. there's all kind of things going on.
Well, there's like, where are my tickets going to be?
Yeah, yeah.
There's all this. I also just wonder if it's, I don't know if it's like anyone's fault. It also seems to me, college football in general, whereas it used to be like this was a calendar day, like the day you got the first poll. It does feel like, in general, everyone's just like, okay, whatever. Like, you know what I mean? Like, because more times than not, I think most people feel like it's kind of sorted itself out by week three anyway. And like, that's the other thing. It's like, with Memphis, okay, how many opportunities would you have to be ranked? Because you're going to play Florida State so early in the season. You're going to be a significant underdog. It's like, to me, it sorts itself out one way or the other. Either you wind up being ranked for a week, and then you lose to Florida State and you're out, and then you got to fight your way back up. Or you beat Florida State and it takes care of itself anyway. If you beat Florida State, you're going to be ranked no matter what. Like, so it doesn't, there's kind of, I feel like maybe as fans, we've gotten a little bit more rational. Whereas I feel like this used to be like a huge, like, inflection point of, this is the day that we can't wait to argue.
But also think, you know, with football, ever since the season ended and you knew that Seth Hennigan was coming back, and he declared that pretty early, at that point, and then you find out Rock Taylor's back, people are now getting you know, hyped about football. And it's almost like Tiger basketball, where, you know, with that top 10 recruiting class, that people are talking about you during the entire offseason. So you're starting to get that with football. Everything you read has Memphis being the group of five team, the most likely candidate to make the playoff. And so people have kind of gotten, you know,
trained,
and they kind of expect it.
The thing, though, that is still odd to me is trying to determine, like, it seems to me that the anticipation is muted, but is that intentional from the fans in the sense of, all right, when you're preseason expected to win the league, you're, if not the most likely G5 candidate, you're in a handful of basically two or three schools. It's not, there's not really a ton of other options. There's really only one direction for it to go, which is disappointment.
Well, how excited would people be if you were, you know, in this position, but you were also in the league with UCF and Houston and Cincinnati? I think that would add a lot more to it.
I think there's a huge part of it in which you can't get around the fact that there's not many meaningful games. Because, like, that's my whole deal of, okay, if you have a season where you don't win the league, what does that look like? Because there are always, in my opinion, seasons in which if you fall short, there's enough for people to remember and still feel good about. The problem is now, if you fall short, what is there to feel good about? And it's like, okay, maybe you beat Florida State on the road, and like, that's a historic day and like an unbelievable moment. But what if I tell you, like, they beat Florida State but don't win the league? Then everybody's going, well, what happened? And despite the fact that, like, I think Tulane has clearly built a good football program, and I think that is a underrated good job, it's not like beating Tulane, USF. Like, there's not big days of games that you remember. Like, we all still remember when Brady led the drive against UCF. Like, that's not UCF's best team, whatnot, but that was a big day. Like, you can remember, you know, the Mississippi State game. You can remember the Ole Miss wins. You just look at the schedule and you just go, how many wins can really change how you feel about it? Because it feels like when you just go through the schedule, it's like, those are teams we should beat. And when you get into the situation where you don't beat them, well, then everybody just starts to feel kind of like crappy. Like, what do we do?
If you make it to the playoff, if you don't lose to Florida State, but you are the Group of Five rep, then I think all is fine. I don't think you can suffer a loss once that.
You could talk me into losing a regular season conference game, losing to Florida State, and because I think the reality is going to be, no matter what people say, the season's different than last. What happened to Liberty in the bowl game, I just think that's going to be held against them.
Yeah.
Now, the question would be, could you survive a conference loss? Because the most likely candidate outside of you is Boise, who they were one spot ahead of in the preseason coaches poll. Boise's in a similar spot in which they have to play Oregon week two. Mm-hmm. And so they've got a should-be loss coming. And very rarely do we see teams go through the Mountain West completely unscathed. And then they're also going to have to play Oregon State and Washington State. I don't know if playing Oregon State's going to matter. Oregon State's entire roster was completely and utterly decimated. But Washington State's got enough that maybe it gives you a challenge. They got to go to a UNLV. So there's maybe the chance of, I think if you're even with Boise and you both have two losses, I think there's still a legitimate path there, but that would be what you'd have to avoid. You need to root for Boise to really wind up with one more loss than you have.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's still an interesting time, and it's something that people have never really had to look forward to in this regard. I don't think that a team like Memphis, if they get in a situation where they run the table and lose only to Florida State, then everything will change. I think you'll see an excitement here that you haven't seen in a long time.
Well, it's this weird reality now of, like, if you've been around it, you understand it. But think about it in these terms. If I tell you 10 years ago, Memphis could go 9-3 and people would be disappointed.
Yeah.
I think everyone would collectively go, are you high? Like, well, what is wrong with you? But if you map out what 9-3 would look like, okay, here's what ends up happening. You likely lose to Florida State, you lose two league games, and at that point, you're unlikely to host said championship game. You might at that point be likely to miss the championship game. Because the other thing that we've seen, at least in the early return of this diminished league, is that the better teams separate themselves, and so it's going to be pretty hard to stumble twice. Like, in last year's championship game, SMU's undefeated in the league. Tulane has one loss in the league, but their loss was to SMU. Mm-hmm. And so when we saw, I think it was the top four, I think the top four of the league, they only lost to each other. And so you take that second loss, and now you're sitting here at 9-3 without a conference championship game. And we're talking about your best win is something along the lines of USF on the road, UTSA on the road. Maybe Troy at home if Troy winds up being good. I mean, I think it's really hard in a job like Troy when you lose your coach. It's really hard to just kind of keep it rolling.
Mm-hmm.
But now we're sitting here in a situation where you're 9-3. You lost probably multiple games as a favorite. And I don't think it's like insane to think that if you're a fan afterwards going like, if not now, when? Like, I don't think that would be some type of irrational, well, you're Memphis, what are you thinking? Like, I think it also shows just the college football has become this, I think it's also with Memphis's watered down schedule and now the reality of SEC teams are not playing them at the frequency that they once did. So you don't have the opportunity for like the massive, like memorable day win. And it means you probably beat up on some teams that you were largely two touchdown, if not more, favorites. Like, I think people would have a right to sit there at the end of the season and go, like, what are we doing here?
Yeah. Again, we're going back to the fact that you're the heavy favorite to be the group of five candidate. And that's kind of taken the place of playing an Ole Miss or Mississippi State or Tennessee or Arkansas. That's become your goal. And whereas years ago you could beat Ole Miss and maybe Mississippi State in the same season, and then all of a sudden that's the year, no matter what the record is.
Correct.
People
It's college football has always largely still been like a special day game. Like, you know, like you can Tennessee. I use the example when Tennessee went 10-2. Yes, they have the disappointment of the South Carolina loss, knocking them out of the playoff, and then Hooker getting hurt, whatnot. But nobody's taken away that Alabama game from them,
right?
Again, like, you know, they end up going to the bowl game and they beat Clemson, and it's a good season. It's like, yeah, they fell short of making the playoff, but no one really cares. Like, that was a fun season. Everybody loves it and thinks of it fondly. College football's always kind of had that reality. If you can have, like, Hugh Freeze was the king of this at Ole Miss. He'd have at least one bad loss a year, if not multiple. But there'd always be a big-time win, and the type of win that everybody remembers. And so that 9-3 always left people feeling pretty good. But now we've reached this, I think maybe this is also inherently tied into it. When is the last time, if ever, the Memphis football job in its league was, if not the best job, the second best job, and it's kind of like you're splitting hairs? Because to me, the only job that I would even remotely consider it in its category is Tulane, because I think Tulane's an underrated good job. Number one, you're in a pretty good recruiting spot that, yeah, you're not getting LSU's guys, but the guys LSU doesn't want, you can get pretty easily. They have money. They're spending money. And they've been pretty stable for really the last decade, ever since Fritz got there. And I think I don't think Summerall takes that job unless he thinks it's a good job, because he had a couple other opportunities. I think he believed that this would be kind of a springboard. So Tulane, maybe. I've listened to the argument. I still think the Memphis job has more. But, I mean, I can't think of any other point in time in which the Memphis football job in its own tier has ever ranked as high as it does.
No, and look what's happened in the last few months, you know, with the FedEx, more of their input. So if you're looking at what a good job is in this league, with that kind of backing, I mean, there's not many schools in this league right now.
I mean,
I can match that.
I think it's entirely possible you have teams in this league that don't have the NIL budget of Memphis's quarterback. Like, if you told me Charlotte doesn't have $400,000 or $500,000, I totally buy that. And so now we're in this day and age, and I do think that, like, I think that matters. I understand that there are some people that would say, like, well, if you're complaining about a 9-3 Memphis football season, like, you just don't know. And it's like, I understand your argument. I still think, though, that ends up being disappointing, because I look at the roster and I look at the opportunities. Like, if Memphis can't win it now, it's like, I don't know what the answer is. I mean, the answer is you just keep trying to give yourself shots and you keep recruiting and whatnot. But it's like, that'd be a tough one to swallow with your fourth-year quarterback.
It reminds me of those years when Calipari had the basketball program in Conference USA, and you expected them to just dominate each
roll
year. So this is kind of like, for the first time, football's trying on this new suit, and it's one that they haven't had to wear much. But it does remind me of the stuff that Calipari dealt with.
And I think he kind of, other than the let's see, the 05, 06, 07, or I guess maybe it was 06, 07, 08 run. Like, that first couple of years, there was kind of the, like, he'd make the tournament, win an NIT. You know, okay, we got DeJuan, but what do we got to show for it? Like, there's not a ton there. You kind of went through that, but it's like, once you break through, it gets a lot easier. But yeah. I do think you're right. Like, there was definitely some, what are we spending all this money for? But, I mean, I also think this is, has there ever been a year, well, not me, I think the answer has to be no. There's never been a year in which Memphis has been picked to win the football title. But the fact that they're likely to be both the preseason favorite in football and basketball. I mean, I don't even know another year that even comes close in terms of what you're expecting from both. And now the weird thing is, you think probably, it feels to me like the fan base, and I don't know, the season will maybe bear out differently, but it feels like the season, you have a higher ceiling for the football season than you do, because it almost feels like with basketball, everyone's going to kind of be okay if you just get back to the tournament.
Right.
Which feels like a lowering of the standard in general, but I think we could all agree if you end up back in the tournament, most people are going to, like, you're at a point now where you kind of need to take a deep breath and you want something positive, like you'll just take the, you know, you'll take the layup, if you will. But it does feel like more people have faith that the bigger season could be the football team.
Yeah, there's no doubt. And with basketball, I mean, with them kind of restarting again, you know, people getting used to the fact that he's bringing in the 8 or 9 new players each year. So, yeah, it is a whole lot different. I mean, it's almost like a reverse when football was happy to be in a postseason event.
Yeah, I mean, like, we were laughing last week, but if you just, like, this is how much college football's even changed in 20 years. If I just say Memphis making the New Orleans Bowl after the 03 season was a big deal, people today would just kind of roll their eyes. And it's like, no, you don't understand. That was a big deal. And it wasn't a big deal in the sense of like, oh, that's cute, pat him on the head. It's like, number one, bowl games were very different back then. Making a bowl game was a very difficult situation for Memphis. When a league, you don't have a ton of tie-ins, there weren't many opportunities. The fact that they made that bowl game after so many years of not going to a bowl game, largely because they scheduled themselves out of bowl games, and then it didn't help. There was a large portion of that when they played independently, and so there's not the tie-ins, whatnot, but like, it was a big deal. And like, it wasn't a phony big deal. It was a big deal. But now, like, you're in this weird reality, and I think that's kind of maybe the bigger question. It's like, it feels like for Memphis football, the struggle that they have is there are not many opportunities for big moments.
And this is it.
Other than like this.
You know, you go back to the New Orleans Bowl when you're talking about that. Those same people that would not know whether or not it was a big deal and can't believe you say that. Imagine 20 to 25,000 people showing up in New Orleans from Memphis for the bowl game and overtaking the French Quarter. I mean, that tells you how big it was at that moment.
Jeff missed the radio show one day.
Because?
Yeah, because he was French Quartering.
It was like, there was, if you walked through the French Quarter, you saw 15 people that you knew from Memphis. It was just that crazy. So yeah, that was a huge moment and kind of started this whole thing.
Well, it also, and this might be the unfair part, I think maybe also wrapped up in the tampering, the people that want to kind of tamper their expectations, if they are, I think partly wrapped up in it is this belief, whether or not it's right or wrong, that somehow if you blow this season out, it changes your future. And I guess the way that I look at it is, if Memphis goes 11-1 or 12-1, makes the playoff, and it basically achieves everything that I think realistically you would say is the dream season, I personally don't think that's going to be the difference between Memphis moving a league, moving up a league, and not moving up a league. But I do understand how fans think that, like,
it doesn't hurt.
Yeah.
I mean, really, that's what it comes down to, because they're still the team, they're still the program out there that's just right on the fence. They're, I mean, almost the next one in.
I've always just used the analogy, like, we're at the deli or the DMV, and you look up, we've got A20 on the ticket, and we're at A19.
Yeah.
And so you think that you're next up. The question, though, that I've always had is, it's not whether or not you're next up. It's whether or not they're going to still be taking orders.
Yeah. And again, as long as the program continues to show the kind of, you know, I guess, support that they're getting from the FedExes of the world, and as long as there's the stadium being redone, and you see all this momentum, that's what helps down the road as much.
If the fans have to endure, like, let's say the ACC breaks up, and let's say they break up in a fashion in which the ACC doesn't survive. Because typically what we've seen throughout conference realignment is usually one league always ends up going away every time we do a round. I don't personally think that's the most likely outcome, but it's a possible outcome. The Big 12 ends up scraping up the parts of the ACC that it wants. The Big 10 and the SEC fight for whatever schools that they want. But by doing, by the Big 12 taking, like, let's say the, they take the NC States of the world, the, they're going to take Pitt, they're going to take Syracuse, and there ends up not being another spot for Memphis. Does everyone at that point, like, that's what I've always just wondered. It's like, do you just say, like, we got to keep going, got to keep going? Because I don't know, like, you, at a certain point, you just start to wonder, it's like, is there ever going to be another opportunity for someone that is in the G5 or whatever we're going to end up calling it eventually to move up again? Because I do have the negative thought in my head is, what if SMU did the most desperate thing we've ever seen, which is essentially saying, we are going to forfeit $700 million, roughly, and then spend to stay competitive? Like, that's what, we're doing this because we think this is the last, like, this is the last train. If you don't make this train, you're not getting there. You don't make this plane, you're not getting there. I do wonder, like, what is the, what's the reaction from everyone if that ends up being the case?
And then all that's for naught for them.
But then I guess you say, hey, you wind up, hey, we got a new stadium out of it. They're still going to play games on Saturday. Like, yeah, it's not a, they're not playing, you know, they're not playing UCF for the right to go to the playoff, but here we are. I mean, you end up figuring it out.
Yeah, something will transpire, but I think there'll always be a place for that. But yeah, that would be harsh reality.
All right, let's take a quick break. When we come back, let's talk some Tiger basketball. We'll do that with Jason Munns next. Stick around. You'll listen to Jeffrey Wright and Company, 92.9 FM, ESPN.
From the mind of a two-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
In life, some days are good, and some could be better. The same is true for recovery. Both take work. Both take adjustments. Finding your path is a key part of your journey, and then it's all about walking it every day. Embrace the good days, the not so good days, and the challenges, and acknowledge how you overcame them. Be open to every part of the journey and welcome it. It's unique and it's all part of you. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.
There's sports betting, and then there's Circa Las Vegas, an adults-only sports watching nirvana. Now you can watch up to 19 games at the world's largest sports book on a 78-million-pixel, three-story mega screen. Plus, it's always spectator season at America's largest pool amphitheater, Stadium Swim. Stadium Swim is open 365 days a year and features all sports on an epic 143-foot screen. Book your reservation at CircaLasVegas.com. Circa Las Vegas, this is sports the way it should be.
Nerds. Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Ready to expand your financial game? NerdWallet can coach you on smart strategies like choosing investments, finding your next credit card, and setting a budget that works for you. Score major points towards your summer vacation by learning expert tips for choosing a high-yield savings account and how to build wealth by investing in index funds. Slide into summer with smarter decisions in 2024. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast on your favorite podcast app. Future you will thank you.
I don't know. I like it. I like it a lot.
It's a great Monday vibe song, so I thank you for that. All right, I'll ask you a question that you posed yourself. Is the 2024-25 Memphis basketball non-conference schedule the strongest ever?
It feels like we are asking that question every year now for like the last two or three years, and I think there's a good reason for that. Like,
Yeah. It might have to be.
Yeah. Well, I mean, so I also asked that question in the story, like, if, and we can talk about this, you know, separately, but, so maybe I'm getting ahead of myself, but like last year, if the last couple of years have taught us anything, it's that you don't have to, even when you are, like, let's say you are in a league like the American, looks like it's going to be this year. You know, you're probably going to have to win the league anyway. Maybe no matter what you do in non-conference, you're going to have to win the league anyway. So, you know, there's two paths to net glory. And one of them is doing what Memphis is doing. And that's just loading up on, you know, the as many beasts as you can possibly get. Or it's scheduling a bunch of cupcakes and just dominating them and letting the formula do the work for you, you know, the whole margin of victory, the whole, you know, all that stuff. Like we saw it, we've seen it the last couple of years where teams in, you know, outside the top leagues are like inexplicably ranked very highly in the net, despite having not played anybody that most people would consider are very good. And it's because they schedule these cupcakes and they beat the crap out of them. And the net
metric manipulators.
Rewards, yeah, the net rewards you for that. And it's not just teams in the, you know, in the ACC or the SEC or the Big 12 that are doing that, because, you know, like they can afford to do that because they are going to be playing great competition in their league. But it's also teams outside those top leagues that are doing it as well. So I don't know. But the point is, Memphis has chosen again to not go that route. They have decided to go the route of the, you know, scheduling very, very stiff competition. And the reason why I say that, or the reason why I pose that question is, like, is this the best one yet? Is because, you know, twelve of the thirteen non-conference games are known. We know them, and it's like I don't care who you schedule in that last spot. You're looking at, you know, every team that we know of right now finished top 160 in the net last year, and it would have that number would have been even higher were it not for Missouri, who won 8 games last year and finished 158. So even Louisiana Tech, which was announced last week, I think was 93rd in the net last year. So like, I submit once we find, even after we find out who this 13th, even when that 13th game is announced, I submit it's going to be the best non-conference schedule that maybe they've played, at least in a very, very long time, at least in recent memory.
Yeah, I think the answer to the question of what should the strategy be, it seems to me like if your goal is just to make the tournament, it almost seems to me like you should just schedule the cupcakes and just rack and stack wins. And
Right. But
I don't think, like, you know what I mean? Like if your goal is, however, to be a tournament team that is capable of making a run, well, if you rack and stack cupcakes, what we've typically seen is if you're still gonna have to win the league anyway, like you're not gonna get a competitive seed. And what's the easiest way to make a deep tournament run? Get a competitive seed. Or, you know, you wind up in the situation that FAU found itself in, that Memphis could have also found itself in, which is the number one seed, you're in the 8-9 game, and the number one seed gets upset by the 16, and so now you're off to the races, and you wind up playing a diminished Tennessee injured team, and then you've got to play Kansas State for the right to go to the Final Four. Like, so it seems to me it becomes a question of, are you just trying to make the tournament, or are you trying to do something in the tournament?
And I think that's totally, like, that's valid. All that's valid. And, you know, we obviously know the answer with Penny Hardaway and this Memphis basketball program. We also know Penny Hardaway, and we know that by now, we're going into year seven, he's not going to, I would be shocked if, as long as he is head coach, that they're ever going to take their schedule, as Alex Simmons, the women's coach, said, the way she phrased it a couple of weeks ago in an interview, they're never going to cake their schedule under Penny Hardaway. And so I like it. I mean, the one of the most interesting things to me, besides the fact that, you know, you've got road games at Clemson and Virginia in December, you've got the, you're hosting the Mississippis, and also in December and later December. And then, you know, of course, you've got a home game against Missouri. You've got a game in Vegas against UNLV, a neutral site game against San Francisco, the Maui Invitational, which the only team in that field besides Memphis, I take it back. The only team currently not projected to make the NCAA tournament by Joe Lunardi is Colorado, the team that went to the Sweet 16 last year. So yeah, like it's an incredibly strong schedule. But what I was saying is, none of the 12 games that we know of so far are those extreme low majors that you see a couple of every year. With Memphis, you know, like the Central Arkansas, the North Alabama, the Tennessee Tech,
yeah,
the Alabama State, there aren't those games. So there's only one spot left. I don't think that even that last spot is going to be quite like that. I think it's got a chance to be very, very rewarding if Memphis does what it's supposed to do, but it's also pretty risky.
Jason, don't you think, you know, you've been around this program ever since I was out there with Penny, but in his DNA and from his playing days too, he remembered the games against Arkansas and how big they were, and when he became coach, he wanted to carry that on. And I think that's the reason why his schedule will always be filled with strong opponents like this one.
Phil, is that you?
Yes, sorry.
Holy cow. This day just got so much better. This day got so much better. It's the best surprise in a long time. So much so that I missed the question. I'm kidding.
You got it.
I'm kidding. I mean, I agree with what you said. That Memphis is, like, it's in its DNA, and it certainly has shown time after time after time that they want to, you know, they want to schedule the best of the best. And but what I was saying earlier, I want to go back to the point that I was making earlier. The risk reward is so, you know, like it's very much there with the schedule. Like, what if you go to Maui, and because like the last few years, the MTEs that Memphis has played in, like we sit here now and we think, you know, every offseason we look at it and we go, man, that's really a nice MTE, especially if you get the right teams. Well, what if, you know, there's always that risk that some of these teams don't pan out the way you hoped. You know, was it just a couple of years ago that North Carolina was terrible? And, you know, Michigan State has had some down years in recent years. So you got to hope for those teams to be good. You got to hope for the teams like UNLV, like San Francisco, Missouri. Last year we all thought Missouri was going to be great. Or at least, you know, you thought it was a road game against an SEC opponent. You thought, you know, those two things would help you, and they didn't really, because they only won 8 games. So there's definitely some risk involved, but I don't know. I think this is as close as we've been in a very long time to kind of like a foolproof, you know, a foolproof schedule against that.
I was thinking about this, not to relitigate last year, but this is something that's always kind of, I found myself wondering as we were watching last season unfold. There was the narrative that their non-con mark, it was kind of smoke and mirrors-y. You know, it was fraudulent. The teams that we thought were good were not really good, and so Memphis beat up on them, and then they got exposed as the season went on. I tend to think it was a good team. Yes, the schedule maybe wasn't as demanding as we thought, and that's why they were able to go 15-2 or whatever, 13-2 in the non-conference. But it was just a fragile team that just got absolutely derailed, and then once it got derailed, they couldn't get it back. When you look back on what last year was, how do you frame it in your mind?
I mean, I think I tend to lean more toward a couple of other things. One of them, they put so much emphasis, or not they, just the overall they, put so much emphasis on the non-conference schedule. Like, that's the most important part of our season. Like, that was sort of the theme, was that we've got to kick butt against these non-conference teams because we have opportunities to show people what we're made of, and we've got to make the most of these opportunities against the Clemsons, which, I mean, as it played out, Elite Eight team, Texas A&M, who did they play down to the wire here in Memphis?
Houston, wasn't it? When that was like I think it was the last game of the weekend.
I mean, overtime,
I think multiple overtimes.
Yes, I was there. I should have remembered it, but because it was one of those instant classics. It was a fantastic game. But again, Texas A&M on the road, that turned out to be a really nice win. But so, like, and I think, but what I'm, the point I'm making is, I think that they got caught up in all of that. You know what I mean? Like, once they got through that gauntlet, so to speak, they kind of felt like they could take their foot off the gas a little bit. And then, of course, you know, Penny talked about it a number of times in public, that there were some locker room issues. And I think that also exposed the team more than anything else, is that, you know, you had some, I never bought into the whole, to like the quote unquote infighting. I don't think there was as much that as much as there was just politics. Like it like, you know, like, or not even politics, but like guys who just felt a type of way and they were letting it affect their play on the floor. Like it bled out onto the floor, and you know, ultimately, it snowballed. And I think that's what caught up with the Memphis team last year more than anything, was just, you know, again, like, it also didn't help that they didn't play FAU until the last 2 weeks of the regular season. Like, when you have such an emphasis on the early part of the schedule, and then, like, you know, all you hear is it's going to be you guys and FAU pretty much for the whole season. Well, you look at the schedule, and FAU is not until March. Well, then you can kind of breathe easier a little bit in between, and they did that, and I think that's what ended up costing them more than anything.
Jason, do you think that this group, I know you have limited access at this point to the players, but do you get any indication that this is a more cohesive group? They seem to get along better, or is that too early to tell?
That does seem like something that is happening, yes. You know, there was a series of, or maybe a series of photos and maybe even a couple of videos that were posted on social media last week by the basketball program social media accounts. And it was like they called it a family game night at Penny's house. And, you know, all these photos of all these guys playing games and interacting and enjoying one another and just being together and the fellowship and the whole thing. And, you know, I'm not sure I know they've done team bonding and team building things for heaven's sakes. Last summer they went to the Dominican Republic and they were riding horses and they were swimming and they were, you know, doing all sorts of things. They were going out to eat together at the resort. You know, like all that stuff was happening. So it wasn't as if this, these sorts of things are never done. I think the year before that, they also had like a Navy SEALs type, team building, team bonding thing that happened. I want to say that was 2 years ago, but so these things are not completely out of the ordinary, these game night types of things, but everybody I've talked to, the indications are that this team, the fact that they've been here together since May, since the end of May, and they've been working these last 10 weeks or whatever it's been, I think that is going to pay dividends. You know, and I mean, like, everybody talks about how these all these new players and new faces and nobody knows each other. Well, that's not quite true either. You got Moussa Cisse and Tyreek Smith played together for 2 seasons at Oklahoma State. You know, Nick Jourdain is here. He's been with this coaching staff. This is going into his second season being with his coaching staff. So, yeah, I mean, there's familiarity. There's camaraderie. There's seems to be a good amount of cohesion and chemistry, probably more so than the last couple of years when you had guys who were coming in August and September. I do think there is they're ahead of the game now when it comes to that, I think.
Well, I mean, like, to your point, I mean, it's not that they haven't done some of these things. It's that on some of those things that you just mentioned, like, I think back to the Dominican trip, we didn't know how many guys were actually going to be, like, making that trip. I mean, remember, like, at one point, we were, like, setting, like, an over-under of, like, who's actually going to be here. Like, I think they ended up surprising us having a few more than maybe we thought, but, like, it wasn't like, you know, you still didn't have the whole team there.
No, and so I think they left on a Monday. One guy got here on Friday. One guy got here on Saturday. One guy got here on Sunday. And another guy met the team
at the airport.
I think it was either the Dallas or the Houston airport. He met them there. And then, like, sort of like they held a seat for him, you know? And that's where he joined the team, was in the airport on the layover to the Dominican Republic. Like, that's how late things were going. And then, you know, you throw in Naquan Tomlin coming in December. And then 2 years ago, you had DeMarre Franklin, who you didn't know what he was going to do. Oh, yeah, last year, you can't fail to mention that David Jones didn't get here until, like, the first or second week of September. Malcolm Dandridge, you know, he was in the transfer portal until the absolute very last second. So, yeah, the fact that they've had 10 scholarship guys here since the end of May, none of them have left. The only ones who came in later were PJ Carter, the UTSA / Rice transfer. I think that's it when you're talking about scholarship players. So does that mean the difference between several wins and losses? We'll see, but it certainly can't hurt.
If I break the season up into three components, non-conference play, conference play, conference tournament, what's the most, in your mind, like, what is the most indicative of how the season went?
Last season or this upcoming season?
I'm saying this upcoming season.
Well,
you see where I'm going with this?
I think so. I hope so, anyway. I feel like, what, conference tournament? Because
it's this weird reality of, okay, we saw this year, like, yeah, the non-conference play, like, it was fun. Like, if you think back to the highlights of the season, like, that Clemson game was awesome. Like, that was a awesome environment. That was a great basketball game. Like, that was just a fun day. But, like, now you get to this point where it's like, okay, even if they run through conference play and they just have kind of a mediocre non-conference play and then they get knocked out of the tournament, like, I still think that they could wind up being on the outside looking in. It's like, I think that is the jeopardy of what the league has become, is if it's this one bid league, I mean, it just to me, it's almost going to be like, are we just really just playing for the conference tournament now?
Yeah, and you hate to look at it like that.
No, it's not fun. I mean, the other, if we talk about the whole schedule thing, you know another reason to schedule good or big time? It's a business. Give your fans the games they want to go to.
Right. Yeah. No. I mean, is there a world where they just, you know, they pick up a couple of wins in the non-conference that they might have been, you know, not favored in? Do they go to Maui and shock, you know, pull off a shocking upset against, say, oh, I don't know, a UConn? I mean, the schedule's not out yet.
One of those teams.
But one of the, yeah, like UConn, North Carolina, Iowa State's picked to be very good this year. Auburn is another one. So, yeah, like, do they do that? And then do they handle their business the way they're supposed to in AAC play? Yeah, I mean, that's entirely possible. But
from the mind of a two-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be. To be.
For those in recovery, support from friends and family often leads to better outcomes. Here's to those who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. Visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose for information about treatment options and how to support those experiencing addiction.
There's sports betting, and then there's Circa Las Vegas, an adults-only sports watching nirvana. Now you can watch up to 19 games at the world's largest sports book on a 78-million-pixel, three-story mega screen. Plus, it's always spectator season at America's largest pool amphitheater, Stadium Swim. Stadium Swim is open 365 days a year and features all sports on an epic 143-foot screen. Book your reservation at CircaLasVegas.com. Circa Las Vegas, this is sports the way it should be.
Nerds. Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Ready to expand your financial game? NerdWallet can coach you on smart strategies like choosing investments, finding your next credit card, and setting a budget that works for you. Score major points towards your summer vacation by learning expert tips for choosing a high-yield savings account and how to build wealth by investing in index funds. Slide into summer with smarter decisions in 2024. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast on your favorite podcast app. Future you will thank you.